Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. Floridians are worried about money. They're worried about their money. By some measures, Florida's economy, and South Florida's economy included, has rebounded significantly from the dark days of the Great Recession. Almost 1 million new jobs have been created in the state since 2009. The unemployment rate in South Florida has fallen to 5%. That's half what it was during the height of the housing collapse. Home foreclosure rates have fallen too, but so have average wages. When adjusted for inflation, the average Floridian job pays slightly less than what it did 7 years ago. That means less money for housing, less money for transportation, insurance, food, fun, you name it. And a lot of this can be masked by the promise of Florida acting as a magnet for outside money, money from Latin America and Eastern Europe, money from the Northeast and the Midwest. The aspiration of a life here in the sunshine continues to be a strong selling point for Florida, fueling the state's population growth and demand for all sorts of things from housing to health care. 2 out of 3 Floridians report feeling financially stressed in a new annual statewide survey. But that's actually an improvement from a year ago. Almost 1 in 3 people say the biggest threat to the state's economy is the lack of good-paying jobs. Now, this hour, we're focusing on the anxiety and the opportunity Floridians have about our economy, an economy made up of small and medium-sized businesses. Later on in the program, we'll talk with 2 small business operators about how they are facing these economic threats. Let us know in the meantime how you're feeling. Are you feeling financially stressed? What do you think is the biggest threat to your prosperity? Find us on Twitter at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Susan McManus is a political science professor at the University of South Florida. She joins us from our sister station in Tampa, WUSF, and she is the brains behind the statewide Sunshine State survey. Professor McManus, welcome. Why are Floridians feeling financially stressed these days?
Well, prices aren't going down in very many commodities and average aspects of somebody's life. Groceries go up, and you just walk around and talk to people, and they say it's costing a lot more just to live. And now, of course, you've had the additional element of higher deductibles on a lot of health care plans. Health care is a big part of many people's lives, whether you have children or not, whatever age you are, health care is a big issue. And of course, you see the daily kinds of ups and downs in the national economy and the unemployment rate going up and down. And I think there's an element of uncertainty as to what the country and Florida's economy is going to look like in the future. That also contributes to this feelings of stress.
You found 71% of Floridians were stressed a year ago. 63% report some kind of financial stress this year. That strikes me as a pretty decent improvement. Still a high level, but coming down pretty quickly, no?
Yes, it is. And of course, economists have been telling us for a long time that Florida has rebounded more than a lot of other states from the Great Recession. And you see it reflected here somewhat. But to say that it's totally improved and that people really think that we have 100% recovered from the Great Recession, these results don't bear that out, yeah. Nor do any other surveys that we're seeing at the moment. And that's why the economy continues to be a huge portion of what's driving people's interest in this year's presidential election.
So, Professor McManus, who are the Floridians who say they're stressed? What kind of characteristics do they share?
Well, clearly one is if you have children at home, that obviously drives up your concern a lot, actually. If the overall percentage of people who don't feel stress is 26%, it's much higher among people who do feel stress is much higher than among those who don't have children. And, of course, obviously your income for people who make $35,000 or less, their households, there's a lot more stress. And then, of course, your economic well-being is often tied to education. And so those three factors, a kid at home under 18, household income and the lower end of the average income, and also people with just a high school education or less are most likely to say they have stress.
But regarding the education attainment, you did find, though, a majority of folks that had at least some college, if not a college undergraduate degree, still feeling financially stressed.
Absolutely. A lot of these people are also people who still have college loans or didn't quite have enough money to complete their college education. This is also often the age bracket where you have children, if you're going to have children. A lot of factors enter into that, but certainly just some college is indicative of the fact that something took you out of your ability to complete college, and often that's just making a living and supporting a family.
Dr. Susan McManus, professor of political science at the University of South Florida, with us talking about her annual Sunshine State survey, finding about two-thirds of Floridians feeling some kind of financial stress. How are you dealing with economic prosperity? What do you see as the biggest economic threat to your household budget? Let us know on social media today on the Sunshine Economy, at WLRN, use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. It is anxiety and opportunity in South Florida. Ali Bustamante is also joining us now, assistant professor at FIU, Center for Labor Research and Studies. He's the author of the annual State of Working Florida report. And Ali, that report out just a matter of a month and a half or so ago, you found that Florida's middle class is shrinking by about 3.5%.
That's right. We find what we call economic polarization in the state of Florida, which is the middle class is shrinking while the working class and the upper class are actually growing. So we're seeing this divergence in the and certainly a growth of inequality in the incomes that we have, that most families and households have here in the state of Florida.
Put income levels on that. What is working class in Florida? What is middle class in Florida?
What we actually look at is that a working class family is a working class household is one that makes less than 66% of the median income, while a middle-class family or household is one that makes between 66 and 200% of the median income, while a upper-class household would be one that makes over 200%.
And the median income in Florida is $45,000 to $50,000.
That's correct.
Yeah. Dr. McManus, when you take a look at your survey of Floridians and the financial stress that you identified, and what Professor Bustamante has found in his data research of this shrinking middle class, what do you come away with?
I often cite his survey. I think it's excellent, and it does really just bolster the feelings here that people are stressed out. And I found in his study also the fact that this is the first time in Florida history that the middle class, that less than half of the people fall into the middle class range. But when people have anxiety, and let's just take some of the lower income individuals, and this has the political connotations, this is what I'm going to talk about. They often are very resentful of higher income and what government does for them, big tax breaks, wealthier people can contribute more to campaigns to influence policy. And they also, I think, divide, I'm talking about the working lower to middle class Floridian, they divide the poor into two categories, those who are very deserving, for which they believe that government should really have help, and that's one of the purposes of government. But they increasingly look at people, others that are receiving various governmental benefits as just scamming the system. And you can see this reflected in some of the other statistics in our survey. For example, a portion of Floridians identify immigration as a big problem, and they see immigration as a threat to the economy. And that's exactly the group that they're talking about, because they often see immigrants as getting more benefits from government than they, and going to the front of the line for social benefits, etc. So you're seeing a huge class dichotomy here, and the battle in America, the most upset are the middle class, which is shrinking, as a professor says, and the wage diversion, which is very troubling to them.
When you talk about Floridians identifying immigration as an economic threat, you found about one in five identifying immigration. We'll talk about some of those other threats coming up later in the hour. Ali Bustamante with FIU, what's causing the middle class in Florida to shrink that perhaps is feeding into that resentment that Professor McManus identified?
Our research really shows that what's underlying this shrinking of the middle class is the fact that middle class occupations, middle income occupations, have actually shrunk drastically since the Great Recession, and they actually have not bounced back in the same way that working class jobs and actually upper class jobs have as well.
So when Professor McManus talks about the among the causes of the financial stress are prices and the cost of living, what you've identified as the shrinking middle class is the income. It's not the outgoing money that you're having to spend to live here, but rather it's the lack of money incoming into people's paychecks.
That's right. And these two things work hand in hand. On the income side, we certainly see that incomes have not recovered since the Great Recession. And by and large, middle-income families and middle-class families are the ones who are lagging the most behind in this recovery.
And why is that?
Well, a big portion of it is just, again, when we look at the drastic rise in unemployment that happened after the Great Recession, the decline in jobs, and particularly the slowdown of job growth as well, much of that job growth hasn't come back. And so a lot of these middle-income families have either shifted downwards to having jobs that pay less than they previously have, or their opportunities to achieve higher incomes aren't just there anymore in the same way that they have been in the past.
Professor McManus, when we hear a lot about jobs in Florida, we hear a lot about jobs in Florida during a political cycle as we're in now, and we've seen job growth since 2009 rebound in Florida. Sheer numbers, almost 1 million jobs. The last count that I had was 995,000 new jobs since January of 2009 in the state of Florida through, I think, July or August of this year. But what Professor Bustamante is saying and what others have said, it's not just the sheer number. Yeah, respond to that.
Yes, you have a lot of people who are underemployed, and as he said, they haven't really gotten the kind of job that they lost back, and that affects their cost of living and everything else. But you also have a number that can only secure part-time work. And it is true that Florida's economy is diversifying. We're seeing expansion of some high-paying jobs in some of the high-tech parts of our economy, but it's slow to come. And so any kind of interruption in, for example, on the space coast, mm-hmm. when you have things that aren't working quite as planned and not proceeding as fast as possible in terms of the privatization of that industry, that affects a lot of people that live in the area. I think one of the biggest growth that is helping Florida is growth in the healthcare sector, where you do see a lot more high-paying jobs coming in. But we're still largely a state that has a heavy reliance upon tourism and all the ancillary industries that go with that, where it's largely minimum wage or slightly higher than minimum wage jobs available.
Is there an economic irony, though, involving the healthcare sector, Professor Bustamante? What I mean by that is, as Susan McManus identified, one of the causes of this financial stress that she identified statewide in Florida is the cost of healthcare and the cost of health insurance, which goes right into feeding the healthcare economy and some of those higher paying jobs.
Well, the idea is that, you know, if we were to create a great amount of these healthcare jobs, which we certainly have, that's been one of the fastest growing sectors nationwide, particularly here in the state of Florida, is that ultimately it should increase, you know, the increase in supply should ultimately drive down prices to a certain extent. However, on the other side, one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that when we think of the healthcare industry, for every one doctor, there are more likely about 50 nursing assistants, techs, and then, you know, some fewer nurses as well. So one of the things that we tend to romanticize, I think, in economics and when we think of these unemployment figures and the growth of the healthcare effect, the healthcare sector, is that, you know, the healthcare sector by and large creates good jobs. That's not necessarily the case. Mm-hmm. It does create some good jobs, but by and large, a great portion of jobs and within the healthcare industry are still relatively low-paying jobs.
Romanticizing,
but it's also true. It's also true, though, that we've had a pretty good increase in terms of the manufacturing of healthcare equipment. We see that particularly along the I-4 corridor. Mm-hmm. And those are very good-paying jobs. So it is true that most of them are not at the top level of a doctor, for example.
That's Susan McManus, political science professor at the University of South Florida, behind the Sunshine State Survey, finding two-thirds of Floridians are feeling some kind of financial stress. Ali Bustamante, also along with us, he's the author of the State of Working Florida Report, finding that the middle class in the Sunshine State has been shrinking. So how about your financial prosperity? Are you stressed out about it? Let us know. At WLRN, use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Still to come on our program, how to get wages up in Florida, and is there a threat to higher wages for companies? That's still to come. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN, Anxiety and Opportunity. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. $8.05. That's the minimum you have to be paid in Florida for each hour of work. $8.05 an hour. Unless you do work that includes a tip, then it's $5.03 an hour plus the tip. So $8.05 per hour. It's a minimum wage that's set each year as outlined in the Florida State Constitution. The average wage in South Florida, a little bit more than twice the state's minimum wage, but when taking into account inflation, average wages in South Florida haven't budged in years. So if you're making more money now compared to 7 years ago, you're doing better than average in Florida. That's what it comes down to. Are you doing better than average by that metric? Let us know at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Susan McManus is still with us, professor of political science and the survey taker behind the Sunshine State Survey. She's with the University of South Florida with us today from Tampa. Ali Bustamante, assistant professor at the Florida International University Center for Labor Research and Studies. Professor McManus, one out of four in your survey said it was the lack of well-paying jobs that is the biggest economic threat. What does that mean for Floridians, the lack of well-paying jobs?
It means that many can't buy homes that they would like to buy. It also means that they have to take on debt if they're sending a child to college. They can't save for their future necessarily. We also found in this survey that 51% of the respondents, which were 1,248, it was a very large survey of adults 18 and over, were in favor of increasing the minimum wage in Florida, and it was highest support for increasing it to $15 an hour was higher among women and minorities and also low-income earners. But as you pointed out, the regions of the state where there was the greatest support for higher minimum wage was in the Miami and Palm Beach areas, where the cost of living is considerably higher than in other parts of Florida.
Yeah, this was an interesting takeaway from the survey. 51% of those folks surveyed do support in Florida $15 minimum wage. Ali, that would be a big pay hike for those Floridians making minimum wage. But how many are we talking about, roughly?
You know, so when we think about the minimum wage, first off, I think it's important to contextualize that it's been around since 1938 in terms of the federal minimum wage. So we do have
And the Florida minimum wage is higher than the federal minimum wage today.
That's correct, yes. And the main reason why it's higher is because back in 2005, we ultimately passed a state referendum to tie the minimum wage in the state to inflation. So one of the things that I think, just even thinking of the history of the minimum wage in the state of Florida, is that there's been historically popular support for increases in the minimum wage, as is evident in that referendum. When we think of, you know, the effects of a $15 minimum wage, it seems astronomical today. However, by and large, most minimum wages are implemented within a 5 to 7 year period.
Particularly, right. There's a ramp up effect. We've seen that in other states and municipalities that have implemented a $15 minimum wage.
That's exactly right. And so, but in terms of, if we were to just roll out a $15 minimum wage one day to the next, you're talking about covering more than 60% of the workforce.
60% of the workforce in Florida would get a raise.
If we were to do that today. However, again, you know, if you were to think about the way that we implement minimum wages, which is over 7 years,
sure,
or something like that, but there's certain levels of catch-up, I would say, in terms of, you know, taking into account for regular levels of wage growth.
Almost two-thirds, what you're saying, though, is almost two-thirds of working Floridians make less than $15 an hour today.
That's absolutely right.
Professor McManus, this support, as you mentioned, is geographically bound in the state of Florida, which spells what for it politically? There had been an effort to push this through Tallahassee last year, and the legislative effort failed.
I think you're going to talk about one of the real concerns of a lot of lawmakers from other parts of the state is what it would do to jobs, and particularly in some of the more rural parts of Florida, if you made it mandatory across the state, where the kinds of jobs available are not the same as they are in the very diverse, both demographically and economically, very diverse part of Florida, which is Southeast Florida and Southwest Florida to a lesser degree.
Well, your survey found the highest support for a $15 an hour minimum wage in South Florida, the lowest support just across Alligator Alley in Southwest Florida in the Naples area.
Right, and that's the most Republican part of the state. It is the most wealthiest. It is one of the wealthiest parts of the state. But East Florida, Miami, Palm Beach, you have a large number of immigrants. You have people who are less college educated, competing for minimum wage jobs, intense increases in cost of living, and particularly in the housing costs. But you also have to even add to that just regular amenities that people have to have to live, food, et cetera, mm-hmm. all higher in that part of the state.
Professor Bustamante, as you looked at the state of working Florida, you found that these lower wage jobs were growing faster than the higher wage jobs that in this statewide survey, Floridians have identified as the biggest economic threat.
And that's exactly right. And, you know, one of the things just to keep in mind is that there is a complementarity between the jobs that are growing, but also in terms of the broad labor force that's available, which is to say, as has been pointed out earlier, we do have a large population of our workforce that does not have relatively high levels of education. And it's really, you know, in the case of employers, they will be hesitant to create high-quality jobs, knowing that they cannot fulfill these jobs with the available workforce, and vice versa. Many workers will not choose to make the necessary educational investments because they don't necessarily see these good employment prospects in their future.
You don't see the ladder up then gets impacted, Professor McManus.
Right, and even in our survey, when we ask, you know, what's the biggest threat to Florida's economy, the lack of well-paying jobs tops the list. But a sizable number of people also mention our inadequate education system, and I hear this quite a bit and see it in other polls. This is particularly true of employers who feel that there aren't enough technologically equipped workers right now that would meet the need of Florida. But it also suggests why the business community has consistently ramped up its lobbying of the Florida legislature to bolster support for Florida's higher education system.
And we'll talk to a couple of small and medium-sized business operators about this role of wages and workers and education and in the state of Florida and their ability to grow their businesses. We've got one note on Twitter from Manuel, who writes us, "The cost of continuing education is one of the economic threats, that's for sure." You can add your voice at WLRN, use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Ali Bustamante of FIU, it's supply and demand, though, right? I mean, if the demand for significantly higher educated jobs, higher paying jobs was very, very strong, presumably the supply would fill it.
And that's why
be created to fill it.
And that's why we often conceptualize this as a skills trap, which is, you know, there's not, in, you know, because on one side it's supply and demand in terms of whether these jobs are available, but the other on the side of the workers, if these jobs are available, do they incentivize workers sufficiently enough to pursue the higher levels of education?
That's right.
And so what we ultimately find is that in the state of Florida, as we all know, it's historically been focused on hospitality, retail. These have been the driving sectors historically and continue to be post-recession. So unless we were to drastically diversify the structural composition of our economy, unless we were to shift much of our occupational structure away from these traditional sectors, which, you know, I don't certainly foresee happening anytime soon,
yeah.
We're just going to stay in this skills trap.
So how about the skills trap, Professor McManus? 100 million visitors coming to Florida. That is strong, strong supply for the hospitality industry here.
Yes, it is. But it's also in this area that we're starting to see some diversification and to a different element of that. For example, ecotourism, which is emphasizing the environmental assets of Florida and promoting that more. And what is a good part of ecotourism? It's having professionals who take people on trips and explain the ecosystem of Florida, explain the Everglades. You're seeing more of people who travel wanting that kind of person briefing them on key issues. We are also seeing sort of medical tourism where, again, people coming here to have operations and whatever, and because of the higher quality of the professionals in that field. And the promotion of these two angles to tourism is elevating some of the skill sets that are needed to ramp those areas up and move it beyond just the service sector, restaurant, hotel kind of element.
And Professor McManus, you're absolutely right. I mean, there are certain ways that traditional sectors can be upgraded. I think, you know, one of the good points that you certainly make is this idea of ecotourism. You know, a few years ago, we had an initiative in the state for green jobs. And the idea there was to upgrade traditional industries, particularly construction, and also sales for higher tech appliances. I'm sorry, for more energy efficient appliances. Mm-hmm. And these are some ways that we can keep the structural composition, however, shift the jobs, the types of jobs within these industries towards more specialized, towards more high-tech, subsets of within these sectors. However, these kind of initiatives have largely been sparse and few and far between among the state legislature.
Ali Bustamante, that's him. He's professor, assistant professor at FIU, Center for Labor Research and Studies. Susan McManus is also with us, political science professor at the University of South Florida. The Sunshine Economy, Anxiety and Opportunity continues. And still to come, do small businesses, medium-sized businesses, the backbone of the economy in South Florida, do they share the economic anxiety of Floridians? That's next. Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, Anxiety and Opportunity. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. We have heard about the anxiety from Floridians. One in four say the lack of low-paying jobs is the top threat to the state's economy. What do you think is the biggest threat to your prosperity? Is it education? Is it the environment? Is it immigration? Is it paychecks? Is it the cost of health care, cost of housing, transportation? We're on Twitter, at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. A couple of small and medium-sized business operators here in South Florida join us now. A.J. Meyer is the Vice President of Business Development at A&F Group. That is a real estate development and construction organization based here in South Florida. Aaron Lee is the founder and CEO of Illuminati Studios, a marketing firm. He's also president of Entrepreneurs Organization of South Florida. Aaron, let's begin with you. Do you share the anxiety that Floridians are voicing when it comes to the economy?
Thanks, Tom, for having me. I would say it's definitely something that we see both in the in the entrepreneurs organization as well as in my own business, and just trying to find ways to drive increased wages for our staff. You know, there's a lot of pressure on small businesses with not a tremendous amount of support coming from our government institutions to help small businesses really thrive and create those jobs. That was a great example of, you know, health insurance last year. We had to, you know, we've offered full health insurance coverage for our staff, and, you know, we offered a premium plan, and we, through the ACA, had to revisit and look at those plans. And, you know, the cost to just maintain that plan going forward would have cost us one job. And so we had to reevaluate and look at other alternative plans while still offering the benefit that we've promised our employees of, you know, maintaining full health coverage.
100% for employees.
100%.
How'd you respond?
We had to shop around and go to the market and find something that, you know, it affected me personally, right? Because I'm on the same plan. So, I didn't like the feeling of having to do that and knowing that, you know, we really didn't have a choice. I mean, it was either going to be we couldn't hire one more person or we were going to have to let go of one person just to maintain the benefit we were having. And so we had to make an adjustment. It's still a good plan, but it wasn't the plan we had been offering for many, many years.
AJ, how about for you and A&F Group as business development? You, one of the traditional tent poles of the South Florida economy, real estate and real estate development, construction. Do you share this anxiety?
Yeah, most definitely. From coming out of the recession, we in the state of Florida had lost over 50% of all construction jobs. So we are back. We're at a statewide around 450,000 workers. But the biggest issue that we face as a construction industry is what AGC recently came out with.
AGC, the
Associated General Contractors Association.
A trade group for contractors, yeah.
Correct. And they came out with a survey that stated in Florida alone, almost 70% of construction firms are having a difficult time finding skilled labor. That is directly associated with increase in construction costs. So then when you look on the development side, increase in land cost, increase in construction cost, it almost does not allow these development firms to actually find a property, find a contractor to build it, and actually have a successful product. So when we go back to challenges in our industry, skilled labor is significant, and it's only driving cost of construction development.
And that just washes all the way down through. It impacts the cost of the land that you or another developer is going to have to purchase per square foot in order to recoup the expense.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so we change the conversation dynamic when we talk about strategies in what I do on the construction side and looking for new opportunities, looking for new pipeline of projects and work. And it directly correlates and addresses this survey in affordable housing. And I see over the next 3 to 5 years, significant opportunities in terms of construction revenue, building buildings for affordable housing product.
Aaron, how about you? How do you turn that anxiety that you're feeling into that opportunity like AJ is voicing there in the construction industry?
Yeah, so it's we also do it in the Entrepreneurs Organization, a global entrepreneurship indicator semi-annually, and it just came out again from August. And our group of entrepreneurs who are creating many, many new jobs in the economy are pretty optimistic. The stat is 68% expect to increase full-time employment.
You've
got to
be an optimist as an entrepreneur.
Yes.
We know that, right, yeah.
Which is actually higher than globally. The average globally out of 4,500 entrepreneurs that responded was 62%. So it's certainly higher in Florida. But the challenge that we certainly face here in South Florida, in Florida, I think in general, is that skilled labor base. There's opportunities getting created, and we want to fill, our staff is all high skilled, labor, but we take on average 3 to 4 or 5 months sometimes just to fill one position because there's many, many people who want a
job. Does that cost you business?
Absolutely. It costs us, it's time of money. Right? It's the time to chase opportunities because we don't have the talent to fill those positions.
Let me put this to the two professors here, Ali Bustamante with FIU, you first. What are you hearing from these small and medium-sized operators here?
Certainly it seems like there's a skill shortage in many industries and that, may perhaps be tied to just a disconnect between the types of jobs that are currently offered in the work and certainly the types of skills that the workforce has. However, one of the things that I would certainly point to is that historically, In the state of Florida, in the U.S. generally speaking, rarely do employers actually hire workers who have all skills necessary for that job, workplace training is a big aspect of just employment practices throughout the U.S. So in some ways, it seems that perhaps there's been a widened gap between the skills available in the workforce and those that are being acquired, or that there's just been perhaps an inclination of employers to try to search for workers that have that are the full package. And by and large, this has been something that some economists have hypothesized happened after the Great Recession.
Yeah, I can tell you internally, I call that the unicorn effect. We're looking for the unicorn, and they just don't exist with all the boxes lined up. Professor McManus, what are you hearing from the small and medium-sized business owners we've got represented here?
Well, a lot of them that I talk with, and I speak to business groups quite often, are still talking about the stranglehold that certain government regulations put on the ability to create jobs and so forth. And this is starting to be, interestingly, a comment that we're hearing among young college students who are increasingly entrepreneurial but having trouble really starting businesses. It's something we're watching. And it was true in the Sunshine State survey that a fourth of the individuals surveyed cited government waste and taxes and regulations as one of the threats to the growth of Florida's economy. And I think that you do hear that from the business community quite a bit, but increasingly from younger people who are getting ready to launch their careers. So we're kind of tracking that from an educational perspective as well.
I'm going to put that right back to Aaron Lee, who's the president of the Entrepreneurs Organization of South Florida. He also runs his own marketing studio here in South Florida. Aaron, you were nodding your head vigorously there with Professor McManus. But what I find interesting is Florida still bills itself as a low regulation, no income tax state. It is one of the selling points that Florida and the economic development agencies throughout the state, not just in Tallahassee statewide, but locally, have used to try to attract jobs here.
Yeah, no, and I think that relative to other states, the regulations are low. However, I think that that's just one leg of the stool. I think that there's a background of coming out of the Great Recession where there's a sense of just aversion to risk in general, that people are reluctant to take those chances, and they're also coming out burdened with higher education debt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those three are really weighing down on people making those choices to say, do I get a job or do I create a job? And I think what we're seeing in the entrepreneur organization is that we used to be called YEO. We were the young entrepreneur,
right.
You know, and we had to drop that title. The median age now is 44.
Mm.
And we have one member in our organization of 175 entrepreneurs in South Florida that's under 30. And that's a big warning sign to me. And so we're trying to create programs that drive down into into college to encourage people to actually consider entrepreneurship out of college.
Risk is a fact of life when it comes to entrepreneurs, no doubt about it. Coming up next here in the search for workers and the search for work, wages and workers. That's still to come as the Sunshine Economy Anxiety and Opportunity continues. We're back on the Sunshine Economy, Anxiety and Opportunity. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Let us know if you're feeling financially stressed. What do you think is the biggest threat to your prosperity, your paycheck? At WLRN on Twitter, use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. AJ Meyer is still with us, Vice President of Business Development for Real Estate and Construction Group, A&F Group. AJ, you were mentioning the difficulty in finding high-skilled labor in construction here in South Florida, even after the collapse. A lot of those construction workers may have left the state. Leaving the deficit here. How have wages been impacted in the construction industry as you've seen the cranes come back here in South Florida and elsewhere?
So to address that, and Ali had mentioned in terms of skilled, it's more proficience than actually skilled, and we're not looking for that magical unicorn. But in construction right now at A&F Group, probably in the last 2 months, we have interviewed roughly 30 people. And only offered 2 job opportunities.
How many jobs were available? Are you looking?
So we're looking to hire between 15 to 20 new personnel through the senior project management roles all the way down to project engineers and superintendents. And the proficiency of those individuals combined with the velocity of the construction market at a peak in South Florida, their demands for compensation are significant.
Such as, give me an example.
So you're hiring senior project managers or they're being offered, let's say in the market, general superintendents in the high 100s. And those are numbers that we saw back in the pre-Great Recession in the mid 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're seeing that again, but businesses have become smarter from that time. And so we're very risk averse in terms of the people that we bring on and in terms of the compensation that we're providing, that they're adequate. Because the last thing we want to do is hire these folks at such a high premium, and in 2 to 3 years, because the markets have shifted, have to let go of that personnel, and we're in the same situation we were in a few years back.
Aaron Lee runs Illuminati Studios, a marketing firm based in North Dade County, also president of Entrepreneurs Organization of South Florida. Aaron, are you seeing the same kind of compensation trends as you're looking to hire?
Yeah, one of the things that we're seeing is millennials also are shifting their prioritization of what matters to them and what they're looking for out of a job as well, too. So it's while there's still the expectation for higher wages, it's also coupled with more freedom with their work-life balance and lifestyle as well, too. So they're looking for even a bigger package to balance out, how they work and not just how much they make while they're at work.
Yeah, you guys are in different industries. I mean, AJ, I can't imagine the construction industry you're going to be able to offer that kind of workplace flexibility. I mean, if you're a project engineer, you're on the job site. Your boots are dirty.
You're on the job site at 5:30 right. a.m. and you're leaving at 6:30 p.m. And so to comment on your millennial comments, it's interesting because we're also seeing that interesting dynamic shift in our industry where work-life balance is challenging for our on-site workers. And so we as an industry need to start reevaluating ourselves, changing how we look at these employees and their work-life balance component, because it is going to be an increasingly challenge for the future, an increasing challenge for us to hire those types of individuals.
Professor Susan McManus is also still with us from the University of South Florida. She is the survey taker behind the Sunshine State Survey. And Professor McManus, as you identified in your survey, a quarter of those said the lack of high-paying jobs was the biggest economic threat in Florida. When you hear, you know, construction jobs paying in the six figures, when you hear, you know, Aaron talking about the compensation and workplace balance challenges that he's having for his millennial workplace, what are your thoughts on that as it mirrors some of the anxiety but also some of the opportunity?
Many people have not realized that the generational divide is finally here, not only in Florida but across the country, with the rise of the millennials and their maturation to work age. But right now, they are the largest portion of America's workforce, and they have different ideas about work, and it's harder to get them to do manual labor than previous generations, even though the wage differential for some blue-collar work is more enticing. They're not all about money. Shockingly to a lot of people in Florida, just for example, among registered voters in our state, 26% of Florida's registered voters are millennials, that's 18 to 34-year-olds, mm-hmm. and another 24% are the Gen Xers right ahead of them. So half of our electorate and over half of our workforce are these young age groups who have different priorities, different training. But, you know, and they've been led to believe that the only way that you can get ahead is to go to college, when in fact some of the blue-collar jobs are paying a lot more. It's a different world out there, and I appreciated the fact that your guests were talking about the need for industry to recognize that it is a very generationally divided workforce that we have, and their priorities and their loans and their debt are very different from older ones.
You know, I want to talk a little bit about that in a moment, but what does it tell you when you hear from a construction development company that they've got 15, 20 jobs open, they've interviewed 30, they've offered two jobs? What does that tell you? Is it a mismatch again in the marketplace?
I think a lot of it has to do with what the people who are interviewing expect about the hours and so forth. We've become one of the the younger generations are all about, don't make me work overtime. Let me have hours that are consistent with my own lifestyle. And as you pointed out, construction is not something that's a 9-to-5 job or one that you can just work part-time if you want to, this, that, or the other.
I just have to ask, Professor, I mean, what about the self-awareness? I mean, if you've got folks in the survey that have expressed that but also expressed the lack of good-paying jobs, do they see their own intellectual mismatch right there? I want to be able to set my own terms, but I also want to get paid more.
You know, we haven't surveyed that. It would be very interesting.
Noted. Professor Susan McManus, stick with us here. Aaron Lee, founder and CEO of Illuminati Studios, and A.J. Meyer, Vice President of Business Development and Construction and Real Estate Development firm A&F. We've got some more to come here as we talk about anxiety and opportunity in the Sunshine Economy, the other threats and the other opportunities for the state. That's still to come next. We're back on the Sunshine Economy, Anxiety and Opportunity. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. We've got A.J. Meyer along with us, Vice President of Business Development at construction real estate development company A&F Group. Aaron Lee is with us, founder and CEO of Illuminati Studios and President of Entrepreneurs Organization of South Florida. And Professor Susan McManus is also along with us. She is a professor of political science at the University of South Florida and the author of The Sunshine State Survey. We've gotten a couple of questions on social media. Professor McManus, I'll put this first one to you in terms of opportunities for Florida, specifically South Florida. G. Unruling tweeting us, what about building on our proximity and relationship with the Caribbean and Latin America to grow industry? You talk to economic development folks in South Florida, they will point out that you know, Miami is the capital of South America, of Latin America, and we've seen significant public investments in the part of, for instance, transportation logistics with a big tunnel under the bay here and port deepening in Port Miami and Port Everglades to try to expand on that trade relationship.
Well, international trade has become a larger portion of Florida's economy, and obviously a lot of it is centered in South Florida. And, of course, many people feel that the opening up of Cuba may, when everything gets worked out, bolster the economy a bit. But it also has been true in the political world that there's been many, many people from our area particularly that have wished that the national leaders, both parties, would have emphasized a bit more of the stronger connections economically with the Caribbean and Latin America. But obviously, we've had a lot of tensions overseas that have had to redirect interest. But in terms of economic development, I believe that the next president, whomever, will really ramp up, start to recognize the importance of those two close regions to Florida and start to ramp it up, because it really is a potential growth market for Florida.
Trade has been brought up in this political season. Aaron Lee, I want to ask you about politics and about business expectations. As you look at the tone and tenor of the political season over the next month before we get to Election Day, is that impacting any business decisions you may have? Is it delaying because of the political uncertainty?
It's a great question, Tom. And I would say that the tenor has been the most elevated I've ever seen, you know, obviously. And I think my take on it is they're going to do what they're going to do. And we're still going to be up to ourselves to figure out the answers in many ways. And that a lot of this is talk. And, you know, when it comes down to what actually gets implemented by the government at large, usually by the time it reaches us, I don't have time to wait for that. I've got to just figure out how to make things work without, you know, the impact of those things.
AJ, how about the uncertainty? Are you seeing that uncertainty begin to flow through the business pipeline that you're seeing at ANF?
To a certain extent, ANF Group, being a construction management firm, diversified in nature in terms of market sector, we don't really do too much condo market. The condo product, you're obviously seeing a shift in buyers from the foreign buyers, South American buyers, due to the unrest and capital issues overseas. But you're also seeing some challenges in the local buyers as well. So that market is starting to subside. It'll still maintain. It's just correcting itself. No fears, no scares. It's just correcting itself. And I honestly think that it will, by doing so, it'll create a demand for local buyers in that condo market. But we're not seeing a tremendous issue with regards to Latin America and the challenges that they're facing.
Well, what about the political environment here in the United States? You know, lots of business in the construction side. Lots of that capital has shifted from Brazil. It used to come from Brazil. Now it's coming from Boston.
Correct. So the northeastern buyers, we are seeing those types of individuals coming down and investing, building branches of their businesses from the Northeast down into Miami or South Florida, for that matter. But it doesn't really affect our business that much in terms of what's going on there. And the capital markets, from that sense, are extremely tight right now. To find equity and debt,
meaning
is
the access to money to
access
do the
to
kind
capital.
Of, right. Dr. McManus, I'll give you the last word here, last 30 seconds. What are the threats to arguably what could be seen as the building optimism, as fewer Floridians are financially stressed this year compared to last year? Still high, but it is trending lower. What are the threats to that?
I still say that it's the lack of well-paying jobs. So we've got to continue to diversify Florida's economy and to continue to take risks from the business sector. But the bottom line again is that our economy is heavily driven by the innovative actions of businesses themselves and business support groups. Rather than government creating jobs, much of the job creation comes from the investments and risk-taking by small businesses.
Professor McManus, we'll leave it there. Susan McManus, Professor of Political Science at the University of South Florida. Our thanks to A.J. Meyer, Vice President of Business Development at A&F Group, and Aaron Lee, Founder and CEO of Luminati Studios. Wanda Miles is our Technical Director today. I'm Tom Hudson. The conversation continues online at WLRN, #SunshineEconomy. Thanks for listening.